Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
I'm Rachel True.
And I'm Trent Venegas.
And you're listening to Quoting Gene Roddenberry,
the 100-day podcast that celebrates what would have been the 100th birthday of the man that created Star Trek.
Each day between now and the end of our podcast,
August 19th,
one of Star Trek's biggest icons,
or celebrity fans,
or both, will be quoting Gene Roddenberry.
Then we're going to take a deep dive into why we think this sci-fi legend still has a lot to say to the world.
Today's quote is read by Star Trek actor and podcaster, Tawny Newsom.
They said if you had a multiracial crew, you wouldn't get in. Well, I said, well, we can't do the show then because we will never get to the 23rd century if we're not all living together.
And I would like to welcome back our guest host this week, actor, producer, director, Star Trek Discovery star, Mary Chifo. Welcome back.
Thank you. Good to be back.
So, Mary, what resonates with you when you hear this quote?
So many different things. I also just want to say that I'm such a big fan of Tawny's, and I just think she's amazing and a brilliant a comedian and actor, and her voice work on Lower Decks is amazing. I love her in-person human work as well. I mean, she is a human on the show, you know what I'm saying. But I just think she's fabulous, and we've only interacted on social media, so I'm very eager to meet her in person. So, Tawny, if you're listening, hey, I think you're good. To the point of this quote, you know, obviously this is a huge part of the impact that Star Trek made from the get-go, was that while we've continued to expand on the stories that we tell, the representation on the screen, the fact that people were seeing themselves for the first time and in this, you know, utopian environment, they were seeing positive images of themselves that were not anchored towards stereotypical ideas of who they were supposed to be. And again, I think we just continue to expand on that and improve upon it with every iteration of the show. Something that I wanted to put out there as well is just the term normalization, which is one that I've really come to love and embrace, is you know, our casts need to be normalized. That the idea of a multiracial crew, of diversifying a cast, I think we need to really look at our vocabulary in who are we presenting at the table. The table is for everyone. It's not anyone's table that people should be invited to, that it should be equally dispersed amongst everyone. And that's the normalization that we are seeking out, is showing what the world looks like and how the world should look. In the case of Trek, is what this utopian society represents is one that, as Gene says, you know, if we're going to get to where we should get to, we have to show this in this way.
Mary, I feel like you have a little bit in common with Gene, just in the talking we've done this week, because I think you're gonna be one of those people who has the chutzpah to do what Mr. Roddenberry did, which was like, well, then there's not a show. Think about that. No, but think about that. That's so much money on the table, right? And everybody loves money. I mean, me too, right? It's security, because it represents security. But all this money's on the table for Mr. Roddenberry, and he's like, you know what? Not a show. Not going to take all this money if you don't agree with my concept of the show. Mm-hmm. And that is so bold. Back then, especially, I'm saying now it's rare. Back then, it was probably unheard of. And I meant that, Mary. Mm-hmm. I think as a producer, as a creator, you're going to be someone who can do that, who can set that boundary and say, no, but really, this is the show. so I applaud.
Well, yeah,
I really.
That's a very. You honor me. You honor me.
But Trent, you too. You know, like, I feel like you guys are aware people, and it doesn't mean we all have to agree on the same things that are, you know, important to us. But it's holding fast to what you believe in, what will help humanity, as these quotes often talk about humanity. But this one's really cut and dried. It's like, listen, we got an Asian guy, we got a black guy, we got a black woman, we got whoever on this show. And if we don't, I'm not making the show. That's deep.
Mm-hmm. He was all in. He was all in financially. He was all in emotionally. And this quote is the first one of all the quotes that we've heard so far that has a little bit of spice, a little bit of flavor. You know, like his quotes are always aspirational, and they're so well written and well delivered by all of our guests who are reading them for us. But this one has a little flavor. I believe it was from an interview on Late Night America. So I guess he felt a little more freewheeling by saying, this is it. This is the way it has to be. We're never going to get there. There's not a show. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, say take it or leave it. All in,
take
it or leave it.
I love the word Mary used, normalized, because mm-hmm. when I hit town as an actor in the 90s, right, and I didn't have any connections to anyone here, everybody said, get a nose job. And I was like, I'm fine with my nose. You could shade that shit. Whatever. It's fine. But also, more importantly, was my hair. Everyone said, I know it sounds ridiculous in today's world, but my curly hair was very controversial. Everybody wanted me to straighten it. And da-da-da-da. And I looked messy and unkempt and all these things. And all I kept thinking was, now I'm going to normalize this for everyone, because this is how this stuff grows out of my head.
Yes.
What's more normal than how it grows out of my head? And to that end, you know, to have a captain with curly, kinky hair on a Star Trek show and for her to be able to wear natural hair and not have it. She could straighten it if she wants. But I'm saying to have that, that's not as important as Star Trek, the whole series. But it helps normalize these things by having a black woman captain or having a... Absolutely. You know, I never got the senator's wife roles because I was considered too kooky. And then I would go in for, let's say, a slave part, and they would say, you're too modern looking. And I would say, I'm pretty sure those plantations were littered with people who looked exactly like me, actually. Mm-hmm. So just trying to normalize this for people is a huge thing. And I'm indebted to someone like Gene Roddenberry for holding fast to that.
Everything you said, I'm just... nodding, I'm mmming and nodding and exactly. I think, again, a huge theme that I hope we can keep embracing in this industry is people standing in their authentic truth is the best version of them. That we don't, why do we want, and again, acting is transforming. It is, you know, obviously we're going to do the work to do, you know, whatever is required for the story. But there are certain aspects of ourselves that we, must be normalized, must be celebrated. And I've luckily been a part of so many conversations like this one where those of us that have come up against whatever thing where someone's like, change this, do that, where you say it's being aired out. People, we are acknowledging it and we're allowing, because that is also a way of representation, whether it's the story is like someone can hear that story and go, oh my gosh, I had that experience as well. Now's the time to stand for that. And I wanted to speak to as well, I think, it's important to celebrate in the way that Roddenberry had this vision and was so steadfast that he is, you know, these are the types of allies we need, that we need that cis white straight man to go, hey, this is how it goes. And I think, you know, we are hopefully in this turning point where mentorship, where we are getting more people in higher positions of power who can then see themselves in someone who is in a minoritized group, which I think also that's a vocabulary word that I've been incorporating, is it's a group that is minoritized, not that is a minority.
I and like that distinction. I hadn't heard that before. I'm curious.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I'm learning more every day, but when I find a term like, again, normalizing casting, and then, make it clear that so many of the terms that we use often are just a result of upholding white supremacy.
Of our manifest destiny. Like, we were talking about this before, like expats versus, you know, illegal aliens and immigrants.
Illegal aliens.
Like, you get to be an expat and wear a cape. And everyone else is an illegal alien. And I brought up the hair thing because I just read that the Army had just finally in 2021 okayed some hairstyles that are black conducive to our hair, my hair, you know, black hair. So it took till 2021 for that to happen. And that's insane to me. I mean, what do you think, Trent? What's your thoughts?
So this interview took place in the mid 80s. So, post the original series, just before The Next Generation went on the air. And clearly, this was something that Gene still held very true to his work and his belief. You know, Star Trek was not a long-running series when it first aired. You know, had some movies, it did really well, and then relaunched again with the Next Generation. And Paramount, pardon the pun, was that a multiracial crew cast was at the forefront of taking us even farther into the future. We had an earlier quote where Gene said something to the effect of, like, if we don't learn these things now, we're never going to make it to the 23rd century. And that's exactly what he's saying again in this quote.
That is a really good point, because he said, these quotes, if you've noticed, if you've been listening to the podcast, some of them are very similar, right? In different ways. But I kind of love that he's got an idea of something that is important to him and then stuck with it. He didn't give up when a pile of cash, per this quote, was presented to him. He could have easily, as I spoke to you in a couple episodes ago, you bend, but you don't break, right? So it would have been breaking for Gene to say, yes, just make everyone white. That would have been a break. But I bet you he bent on some other stuff we don't know about, you know, because in the original show, I always missed a black guy. Like, we had a woman, which was amazing for me to be a woman to see someone else. But I remember thinking at some point in the 80s, I think, like, looking back on the old show, like, was it too threatening for them to have a black guy on the bridge? Because a woman was a little easier and palatable. Like, I even know from my own life as a black woman, especially when I was younger, I was cute and palatable and easy, and you could take home to your parents and it's super easy. But then once you become a woman, it's a little tougher. And for black men or Spanish men or, you know, ethnic men, it starts much earlier. They are turned into men at age 11, right? So I always wonder, we'll never know if that's true or not, but I love that Uhura is on there, so important to all of us. And it's not just, I think, about he says multiracial here, but I think it's again in line with his diversity thing. We just want diversity because out of that comes new ideas and new life. I mean, if Trent and I were exactly the same, we wouldn't have as much fun together on this. Like, I need I need Trent's calming energy before I explode.
And I love you steering the ship and going crazy. I mean, that's
a meteor
great.
Sometimes, but I try.
But that I think that is so, and so something that I, this is making me think of, that I have really learned from the experience of being a part of Trek, is the importance of the representation behind the scenes as well. Because we need the storytellers. Again, we need the allies. And then as much as we can fill our rooms with people who have individual experiences, that makes for a better writer's room, to have an expansion of experiences, because not only will that allow us to not tell the same story over and over again, it will allow us to re-examine the story, that, again, the hero's journey. I'm all about Campbell, and I'm all about, you know, but it's about the reinterpretation and what does it mean to have a black woman as our protagonist? What is her hero's journey? How is that unique and exciting and still follows certain archetypes that we know and love when we've seen a white man do it? But what is the profundity of seeing her take ownership of her own space in her own way?
I'm going to call myself out on something, because I literally earlier said, and this was true in the 90s, I could never audition to be a senator. It was always the senator's wife, because we didn't have women senators in the 90s and we didn't have black ones, right? And I said, when I was talking about the hair, I said I couldn't be a senator's wife. Look how narrow that is, right? But that was conditioning and put on me that you can't be these things. So when you go, when we talk about Mary and her comment about normalization, right? This is why representation is so important, because I grew up in the 70s and 80s and there was nobody. You could be the wife. You could be the wife instead of the lead in your own Joseph Campbell's hero's journey.
And I will say, as a gay man, you know, it took a long time for me to see, you know, gay relationships featured prominently in storylines that were just, quote unquote, normal. It wasn't a fad. It wasn't, you know, hinted at, that it was forefront in the story. For me, the first time I kind of got a sense of that was like in Deep Space Nine, when Dax had her same-sex kiss and they got away with it because she had a male trill in her, but her body was female, and she met an old love who was female and all of that. So,
does
again,
that make her trans, though?
Like, see, I think it also played with that binariness and trans as well. Like, Star
Way
Trek...
Way before.
Yes, Star Trek has always figured out a way to get these messages out there while entertaining and right in front of everyone's face. When the guy on Melrose Place couldn't even hold his boyfriend's hand,
right.
Jadzia Dax was, you know, sharing same-sex kisses with
him. Yeah, and speaking to that, I think I was just having a really awesome conversation with my dear friend Riley Silverman, who is a magnificent trans woman, awesome geek. And we were talking about the evolution of trans representation in Trek. Now, you know, the difference now we have in Discovery is we have two actors who are themselves trans and non-binary, and the profundity of that, and to see that, and that they exist, you know, interestingly, within a world that they are, there is a Trill relationship as well, but I think it's an interesting expansion of, and I think we find this with sci-fi in general, is that where does the mixture of the metaphor of, you know, it's so great to have it in Dax, in Deep Space Nine, in so many different ways, and so many different, you know, there's been queer coding in so many different aspects of storytelling and in sci-fi, and how can we acknowledge that, thank goodness that was there to help us move towards more actualization, but how exciting it is to have actors, and I love this about having Anthony and Wilson be able to speak to their experiences as gay men playing these roles, that since it's not overtly talked about, it is more normalized within this Star Trek world, the beauty of just being able to talk about that. And I just hope, and specifically when it comes to overall queer representation and trans representation, I hope that we just get to see more. I want to see trans women on Trek. I want to see as much as possible in that realm where it is an aspect of their being. That was what I loved what Riley was saying, was that it is an aspect of who they are, and they happen to maybe be an alien or they happen to be human, but it is like an innate part of their existence, and it is loved and celebrated by the people around them. And just the more that we can see that, the better.
You guys, I love that we're having this conversation, because I can't tell you how many people feel comfortable enough to say to my face that they think it's, I don't understand why there has to be someone black on every show or someone gay on every show. Now, it needs normalization for those people. Clearly, that's why this is all important. We could talk about this forever, but we got to wrap it up.
And what a fantastic quote, and what a fantastic conversation. Mm-hmm. So please, if you want to check out the videos of our friends reading these quotes, you can check them out on the Roddenberry social media accounts on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And we hope you'll join us again tomorrow for another episode of Quoting Gene Roddenberry.
Ciao.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of Quoting Gene Roddenberry.
We'd love to hear your thoughts on today's quote. So tweet us, post us, DM us, whatever.
We're at Roddenberry on Twitter and Facebook, and at Roddenberry Official on Instagram.
Quoting Gene Roddenberry is a Roddenberry podcast hosted by me, Rachel True.
And me, Trent Venegas. Producing are Claire Kramer and Kelsey Goldberg, with executive producers Trevor Roth and Rod Roddenberry.
Engineering and editing are provided by Elizabeth Joy Windham.
And special thanks to all those who were kind enough to read a quote and give a voice to Gene Roddenberry's everlasting words.
Live long and prosper.